You're listening to the cycling podcast at the 2025 Vuelta a España, brought to you in association with Lloyds. Lloyds is a partner of British Cycling, supporting the sport in the UK from the grassroots right up to the elite riders representing the country at World Championship level. Lloyds is also supporting vital race series across a range of disciplines, helping to develop the stars of the future, including sponsorship of the Lloyds National Series and Lloyds National Championship events, as well as the Lloyds Tour of Britain for men and women. Just because the road season is going to start winding down after the Vuelta and the World Championships, it doesn't mean that Lloyds' support of cycling ends here, because Lloyds is also sponsoring the Lloyds National Trophy Cyclocross Series, which kicks off in Derby in early October with the first of six rounds that take us through the winter and lead up to the Lloyds National Cyclocross Championships in South Shields in January. If you don't fancy getting muddy at the cyclocross, stay warm at one of the country's velodromes instead, because there's also the Lloyds National Track Series, which also starts in Derby at the velodrome there in October and has further rounds at Newport, Manchester and Glasgow before the Lloyds National Track Championships early in the new year. And after that, of course, the 2026 road season will get underway again. Now, these events are all available to go and watch, and you can see some of the best riders in Britain and perhaps spot a few stars of the future. You can find the cyclocross, track and road race calendars on the British Cycling website. Lloyds, there at every stage. Now it's over to Daniel in Spain.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2025 Vuelta a España, celebrating 10 years of the Cycling Podcast on the ground every day at the Grand Tours.
Buenas tardes, Dani Arribas.
Buenas tardes, Don Daniel.
Dani, we are on the Navacerrada. We're looking out, Dani, this is me, my element, looking out over a beautiful mountainside. The team buses are so growling behind us because we're watching the mass evacuation of traffic off the Navacerrada. But if we look forward, we're looking over beautiful mountains, the Sierra de Guadarrama, Sierra of Madrid. It's at moments like these, Danny, where I'm very tempted just to put my laptop down, put the recorder down, head down one mountain, up another mountain, disappear over the brow, and you would never see me again.
Yeah, for sure. At least for me, is one of the most beautiful places we have recording this last third week.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely, Danny. And we're going to talk a bit more about the Sierra de Guadarrama, of course, scene of some fantastic, last minute coups and unexpected turns of event in the Vuelta a España. As mentioned last night, we wondered whether we would get one today. Danny, we're going to tell the listeners right now, we are going to kill the suspense by telling them that we didn't get that scenario today. We got status quo, status quo with a little sort of supplement of Jonas Vingegaard, not domination, but certainly him stamping his authority on this penultimate stage of the Vuelta a España, proving that he has been the best rider over the last 3 weeks, winning the stage on the Bola del Mundo and, effectively ensuring that he will win the Vuelta a España. His first Vuelta a España, of course, his third Grand Tour tomorrow in Madrid if the final stage goes ahead as is planned. And that certainly seems to be the case at the moment. Danny, we're going to get to the Hamonometro later on, so don't give us your grade out of five yet. But just sum up the feeling, as I say, everyone, fans included, because there were a lot of fans on the route today, they head down the mountain, a lot of them no doubt towards Madrid, where you're from. Teams are also leaving, and the sun is setting not only on our podcast this evening, but on this Vuelta a España.
I think what we saw today was what we were all, maybe not just expecting, but in the terms of our feelings, but in the sense of what we expected of the final result, because Jonas Vingegaard indeed clinched his first Vuelta a España overall win, and he did it in probably the most Jonas Vingegaard way that we saw in this Vuelta a España, which is actually quite interesting, to as we have waited until almost the last day to saw it, but it was just...
It was a third stage victory for Jonas Vingegaard, but as I said just a moment ago, it hasn't been an emphatic Jonas Vingegaard victory in this World Tour Spain. It's been a brilliant performance. It's been a brilliant performance by his team. We'll talk about that later, but it hasn't had any kind of exclamation mark apart from really, well, today and the stage win, of course, at Valdescaray pretty early on. Of course, he got another stage win before the Giro d'Italia had even left Italy. That was at Limone Piemonte, if I'm not mistaken, if I'm not misremembering things. But it's been a sort of, a business-like performance by Visma Leasebike and by Jonas Vingegaard. But they have been rewarded for that today. This morning, we were staying in Avila, beautiful Avila, home to birthplace of a Tour de France champion. Has it birthed any Vuelta a España champions as well? Not sure. The Tour de France champion I'm talking about is Carlos Sastre. We were making our way mainly east towards Madrid, towards the Sierra de Guadarrama, where we are now. For the stage, the stage start today was in a place called Robledo de Chavela. Kind of, Danny, it's sort of an hour outside Madrid, isn't it? To the west side of Madrid. Famous, Danny, because there's a NASA space station there and has been for a very long time. Interestingly, there is a link with the Vuelta a España because the first winner of the Vuelta a España in 1935, Gustave Delors, was a Belgian gentleman who later on worked for a company, the Marquardt Corporation, an aeronautical engineering firm, he participated in the project as well, to send the Apollo 11 Saturn rocket to the moon in 1969. So that's an interesting link with the Vuelta a España. Gustave Delors wasn't working at the space station in Robledo de Chavela. He was working in the United States by that time. This morning, we were thinking about previous sort of showdowns in the Sierra de Guadarrama. One such showdown occurred in 2015 when Fabio Aru turned the tables on Tom Dumoulin with a sort of ingenious tactical move by Astana. They sent Luis Leon Sanchez and Andre Zaitz up the road. Mikel Landa was also key that day, particularly on the Morcuera climb, which wasn't featured today. But I can tell you that Fabio Aru was at the start today, and he rode up the Morcuera yesterday. Also, in the last few days, we've been talking about forest fires. This is really going off on a tangent. Fabio Aru's family have a fruit farm in Sardinia, which was absolutely scorched a few weeks ago or a couple of months ago by forest fires. In that case, it was an arson attack. Fabio told me this morning. He says that they are going to be back in business. He's hopeful that the family will be back in business pretty soon. Danny, why am I talking about any of this? Well, I spoke to Fabio Aru this morning. I asked his advice on behalf of UAE for what they should do today on these mountains to dethrone Jonas Vingegaard. We're going to hear from Fabio Aru. We're also going to hear from Jonas Vingegaard and João Almeida talking to me this morning about how they felt ahead of today's penultimate stage.
Yeah, of course, it's a different stage compared to the stage when 10 years ago when I won La Vuelta, because the climb is different. But of course, to have some riders in the front in the first breakaway, it's always important, because in my experience, it changed my Vuelta. But of course, they have to be focused from the start to the finish line, and of course, Almeida have to give everything.
You always seem so incredibly relaxed. What's going on in your heart this morning? Is it beating a little bit faster than usual?
Not really, to be honest. Just focus on the stage ahead. I'm always quite relaxed. Maybe before the final climb, maybe this heart is going to be bumping for sure faster. Anxiety coming up, which is a good sign. So hopefully that happens. And we can give our all to try to fight Jonas.
This rivalry with Visma has been going on a few years now, and there doesn't seem to have been any real tension between the two teams in this Vuelta. It seems to be very good-natured. Is that the reality?
Yeah, it's a reality. I think we have a healthy competition between us and the respect between each other. Sometimes, we gain, sometimes we don't. And it's part of the game, let's say. And it, in the end, it gives us extra motivation to be stronger. and try to beat them, and they feel the same, try to beating us. So I think it's good. It's a healthy environment, and I'm happy it happens.
Jonas, this is the day. Yesterday you showed you're aggressive, you're ready. You got those 4 seconds, and you're well on your way to winning this Vuelta. What's the feeling heading into this stage?
Yeah, today will be the last big fight, obviously. So actually, we have to just be ready for a big fight today and give absolutely everything we can on the last climbs.
Yeah, same question as Raul. Are you nervous this morning? Nervous on other? That more nervous than in other Grand Tours before decisive stages?
Not more nervous than before, but there's always some nerves. I think you need to have some nerves because otherwise, yeah, you're not there, you're not ready for it.
So that set the scene for today's stage. We hope there will be no major disruptions. There were a couple, but we'll get to that later. It is time to find out exactly what happened on the road, in particular in the
El Jamonómetro de Michele Pelacci.
Danny, how many jamones for today's stage?
I'm going to go with just 3.75.
3.75 jamones. I don't know how many bocadillos, how many sandwiches we established. That I think we had a 3.8 earlier in the World Cup. We established that was sort of three hams and maybe a couple of bocadillos. Danny, I think I would agree with that. Do you know what struck me? And I talk about this quite a lot on the podcast today. At least what today was an aesthetically beautiful stage. And I appreciate these things, Danny. I thought the light over the Sierra de Guadarrama was quite majestic at times. I thought the Bola del Mundo, it can seem a bit of a gimmicky climb. And I know there was a lot of controversy around its inclusion in the race this year as well. Environmentalists were pretty unhappy. But purely on aesthetical grounds, it justified its inclusion because I'd sort of forgotten how unique that finish is. It'd been a long time since we'd had it, 13 years, but it was very spectacular. The stage today, as we've already said, was starting in Robledo de Chavela and was going to the Bola del Mundo. How many kilometers? We're struggling a little bit today because, as some listeners may know, there was an outage, I think, of a well-known cycling results website today. So it's making things a little bit more difficult to look things up. Also, we have very little internet up here. The stage was 165.6 kilometers. Phew. It was a stage of historic mountains for the Vuelta a España because the race was going over the Alto del León, which was the first mountain ever climbed by the Vuelta a España back in 1935. The Puerto de Navacerrada, which the race was going over twice, the second time was the summit was sort of a base camp for the ascent to Bola del Mundo. Well, the Vuelta had been over Navacerrada 34 times in the past. That was a pass built in 1778. Built. There was some kind of track that was created in 1778. Danny, I wanted to ask you this question. Do you know why the Bola del Mundo is called the Bola del Mundo?
I don't know, indeed.
Well, Bola del Mundo is a globe, isn't it, in Spanish?
Yep.
And it is called that because the broadcasting center on the summit in 1959, the antenna were installed up there, and at that time Spain had only one TV channel, TVE, I'll say it in English, one, and its programs were all introduced with the animated image of a globe. And apparently this is why the Bola del Mundo is so called. Also to be mentioned in the Jamonómetro, Sepp Kuss was turning 31 today. Of course, he won the Vuelta a España 2 years ago. First climb of the day was the Alto de la Escondida, the climb of the hiding place, I suppose. Well, Ineos weren't hiding. They were very active, clearly looking for a breakaway, but there was no settled group at the front as the race went over the summit. Carlos Verona, local boy, we talked about that yesterday. Aular, Landa, Van Sevenen, Labros, Buitrago, Haig, and Dunbar did have a small gap over the top. And in fact, it was our loyal friend Jack Haig of Bahrain Victorious who was the first over the Alto de la Escondida. The second climb of the day, which came shortly thereafter, was the Puerto de la Paradilla. That was third category climb, and summit of that was after only 26 kilometers. On that climb, we finally got a 37-man group. Some notable names from that group: Chicone and Pedersen from Little Trek, and Verona, I already mentioned. Landa, I already mentioned. Bernal of Ineos Grenadiers, Buitrago of Bahrain Victorious, De La Cruz of Q36.5, Stefan Kung of Groupama, Eddie Dunbar of Jayco. They were some of the more significant names. On that climb, the Paradilla, Nicolau of Caja Rural was the first over the summit, Carlos Verona second, Eddie Dunbar third. UAE had not sent anyone in the break. They were controlling things on the front of the race and they were keeping the break on a pretty tight leash. The third climb of the day was the Alto del León, which we mentioned a few minutes ago. That was after only 59 kilometers, so a lot of climbing in the first couple of hours of racing. Second category climb, Nicolau again went over the top in first place, followed by Verona and Ciccone. We're going to sort of zip forward now to, well, a crash after with around 90 kilometers to go, where Bjorn Kurt in particular came down pretty heavily. The gap at this stage, well, it was not moving much beyond 2 minutes. Again, UAE clearly were determined to make this a very hard day. They were getting some help, incidentally, from Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, but it was fairly obvious at this point that it was going to be very hard for anyone from the breakaway to win. With 55 kilometers to go, the race went towards the Navacerrada for the first time. In the break, we started to get riders being dropped as Little Trek were doing their very best to keep Ciccone in particular away out of range of the peloton. And this was proving difficult because Ayuso was pulling in the peloton. Red Bull were also contributing with Zwiehoff and Sobreiro. At the summit of the Navacerrada, with 50 kilometers to go, the gap to those remaining leaders was coming down just 1 minute at the summit. And we now had breakaway riders starting to get caught by the main peloton. Reminder, that was 50 kilometers to go at the summit of Navacerrada the first time. Then we had a long valley, but with 20 kilometers to go, we still had five riders down the road. They were Bernal, Landa, Ciccone, Van der Lee of EF Education First, and Bruno Almirai. Those riders, well, they were sort of switching positions, weren't they, Danny? You would get one rider going up the road on a bit of a false flat, then being caught. In particular, we had Van der Lee and Almirai kind of cut adrift at one point, but then they got back. UAE was still pulling behind. Next significant action was at 18 kilometers to go, a significant obstruction to the race. Protesters again making it onto the road. And Danny, you saw this better than I did because I was off interviewing someone at that time. What did you see?
Yeah, we were just watching the race on this big screen at the finish line, and some protesters just jumped into the road when the motorbike was just recording the lead of the race, trying to interrupt, I mean, the protesters, of course, trying to interrupt the lead of the race, which was confirmed at that point by Landa, Bernal and Ciccone. Then the main group went through this point, and based on what we saw on the live TV, the from the helicopter, to be honest, one of the last riders of that group, the main group, was successfully stopped by the protesters, so which something very shameful to see.
Well, we'll hear a little bit more about that later on. We didn't get total clarity from all of the protagonists on what happened. But at that point, Danny, as you already mentioned, well, the race was heading towards the second time up the Navacerrada. UAE still had five riders. They still had Soler, Ayuso, Groschartner and Vine. Visma, I believe, at that point had six riders. Again, the gap was around a minute still. With 9 kilometers to go, we had Ciccone and Landa who were back together and they were leading the race again with around a minute advantage on the main peloton, which had lost Ayuso at this point. With 7 kilometers to go, Groschartner was done. Soler, incidentally, had also disappeared. And we now, or João Almeida rather, only had Jay Vine to help him, to pace him. Meanwhile, Vingegaard was sort of chaperoned by Ben Chulett and Sepp Kuss. It was more a case of them waiting in the wings behind Vingegaard. They didn't really need to do too much at that point, or it didn't, not in the way of pacing anyway. 6.8 kilometers to go, Giulio Pellizzari, this was a bit of a surprise, he was dropped. At 6.2 kilometers to go, Felix Gau was dropped. At 3.4 kilometers to go, Mikel Landa and Giulio Ciccone were caught. This was just as the lead GC riders turned right on the Navacerrada summit and headed up this devilish concrete track of the Bole del Mundo climb. Jayvine tried to do a lead out into the bottom of the steep section, but in doing so, unfortunately, he dropped João Almeida very briefly, and that was Jayvine's work pretty much done. The next significant development we saw was Matthew Richitello being dropped 2.8 kilometers to go, and soon we had four riders, the four best climbers in this Vuelta a España, effectively, at the front of the race. I mean, João Almeida, Jonas Vingegaard, Tom Pidcock and Jai Hindley. Almeida was doing his best to break Vingegaard's resolve, but he wasn't able to do so. And in fact, the first rider to really open up any daylight at the front rather than at the back was Jai Hindley. He attacked with 2.2 kilometres to go. Pidcock looked to be struggling at this point. In fact, it looked as though he may even, well, be struggling to hold on to his third place. A reminder that he led Hindley by a minute, wasn't it? It was just over or just under a minute going into this stage. However, he kept clawing his way back. Then, with 1.2 kilometers to go, Jonas Vingegaard put in the biggest attack we'd seen from him for a few stages, shall we say. And there was a clear difference in his attack as compared to the ones we'd seen before that on the Bole del Mundo climb, because he opened up daylight immediately. And indeed, he would remain off the front of the race all the way to the finish line. And he would triumph, winning his third stage of this Vuelta a España and effectively becoming the champion-elect of this Vuelta. What happened behind? Well, small gaps did open up. Sepp Kuss as well, he'd come back. He'd been with Richitello, but he'd managed to come back and eventually would finish second on the stage, 11 seconds behind his teammate Jonas Vingegaard. Jai Hindley was third, 13 seconds behind. Tom Pidcock, 18 seconds behind. Almeida beaten, and I suppose resigned, João Almeida at that point, 22 seconds behind. Richitello, 24 seconds behind. Jayvine, well, he hadn't pulled the pin completely because he finished seventh, 47 seconds down. Ciccone also held on pretty well, 1:11 down. Felix Gaul was quite a distant 13th today, 2 minutes and 16 down, and Pellizzari was 16th, 2 minutes and 50 seconds down. So a tough day for Pellizzari. Where did that leave us? Well, in the general classification, Jonas Vingegaard now leads João Almeida by 1 minute and 16 seconds, Tom Pidcock by 3 minutes and 11 seconds. Pidcock leads. Did we get that wrong, Danny, about the gap between Pidcock and Hindley going into today's stage? Because that seems like a small gap. Pidcock leads Hindley now by 30 seconds.
Yep. Yeah, indeed. I don't think, because today was in the UCI is 30 seconds exactly.
Maybe the gap was a bit smaller going into this stage than we had thought. Richitello, well, he was the big winner today, as well as Vingegaard, because he gained a place. He went ahead of Pellizzari into fifth place on general classification and, even more importantly, into the white jersey. Sepp Kuss quietly, very quietly, partly because, well, we've not even been giving Sepp Kuss's results because we've been considering sort of Felix Gaul to be the last man in the GC battle. But he's now ahead of Felix Gaul on general classification. He's seventh, 7 minutes, 45 seconds behind Jonas Vingegaard. Incidentally, Pellizzari, Kuss and Gaul are very close together on general classification, only a few seconds between them. But I don't imagine Sepp Kuss will be taking bonus seconds in sprints Felix Gaul. I don't imagine he'll be taking bonus seconds in sprints.
And
leapfrogging Kuss tomorrow. So that should be the finishing order. Torsten Tryon, he's ninth, 9 minutes and 48 down. And Matteo Jorgensen clings on to a place in the top 10. 12, 16 down. Danny, that's a very long first part, a very long hamonometer, but there was a lot to recap on. Today, we are going to hear now from Jonas Vingegaard, as I keep saying, the champion-elect. João Almeida. Would João Almeida be as sanguine about today as he had been on every other day and in every other conceivable circumstance in this Vuelta a España? You're about to find out. And finally, we are going to hear from Matthew Richitello. Of Israel Premier Tech, who was asked about, shall we say, matters off the bike, as you're about to hear.
Obviously, I'm super happy now. It's
It's been a tough 3 weeks for us with some sickness, and then to be honest, to pull it off today and take also the stage win is something that I'm extremely happy about. The team worked extremely well for me in the last 3 weeks, and to be here now is really amazing. I would love to win today, but actually we with how it's been going in the last week, we had more the mindset of going a bit more defensively. Yeah, once the chance is there, you're not gonna let it pass. So of course, when we knew that we were gonna fight for the victory, then yeah, I also go 100% for it. And I wanted to win on Angliru also. It's also a very special climb, but there I was not good enough. And now here, Bola del Mundo is also a very special climb.
Yeah, good. We did what we could. So yeah, we can be satisfied with it.
UAE really put the hammer down today. Felt like it was really setting things up for you today. Was there a moment when you thought, here I am, here's my chance?
We tried to make the race as hard as possible to see what could happen. We had nothing to lose, so of course I believed until the end. But yeah, but that last kilometer when Jonas attacked, yeah, I felt like I couldn't really follow. And he was stronger, so yeah, I have not been feeling great, but it is what it is, and I think we can still be proud of our 3 weeks. Yeah, we considered to attack, but I just didn't have the legs. I tried to put a hard pace as hard as I could, but wasn't really enough. Every race is a chance, so it was one of many, and we keep creating opportunities in the future.
And how would you sum up this Vuelta leading the team, like the main guy in the group?
I think it was pretty good. I think we can be proud of it. We leave Vuelta with a lot of success, and we did what we could.
Yeah, I'm super happy with how the 3 weeks here have went, and I hope to keep improving in the future. Like I said, it's been a perfect race for me so far. I'm excited for tomorrow.
Finally, with the attention on the white jersey as well, do you fear that there's going to be safety issues tomorrow in Madrid?
I try not to think too much about it. I think the police and the organization will do a good job in figuring out what is safe and what's not safe, and just keep going as I have the whole race and try to focus on the racing for one more day, and then go home and relax.
Did you experience the demonstration today when they blocked the road?
I saw it a bit on the left. I think the police did a good job acting quickly. So we all, at least this front group, was able to squeeze by. I don't know what happened behind, but yeah, it's unfortunate that we have to worry about this. I think it's okay for people to stand on the side of the road and do what they want, but it's not okay to disrupt the race. It doesn't do any good for anybody.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, to remind me to tell you that this episode is sponsored by NordVPN, the fastest virtual private network in the world. Now, regular listeners will know that I've been a NordVPN customer for a long time now, a number of years, long before they started advertising in the Cycling Podcast, in fact. And the reason that I signed up in the first place was because I was a bit concerned about the security of some of the online connections I was using when I was travelling away for the podcast, such as press room Wi-Fi or hotel Wi-Fi or even public hotspots or tethering up to my 5G on my phone. And so I signed up for NordVPN because I wanted to have that security that my private data was going to be safe and secure, especially important things like bank details or passwords or my online identity. There are other benefits too. NordVPN threat protection protects you from viruses, malicious malware, and phishing sites. And by changing your virtual location, you can sometimes buy things a bit more cheaply, such as flights or hotels. And when you're traveling away, you can switch your location so that you can carry on watching your favorite TV shows, streaming services, or sporting events. It's fast too. There's no buffering or lagging while you're streaming, and it's affordable. Costs about the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use one NordVPN account on up to 10 devices, so you can keep the whole household safe and secure whenever you're online. To get the best discount off a NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/tcp. Our link will give you 4 extra months for free when you buy a 2-year plan. There's no risk either, because Nord have a 30-day money-back guarantee. The link to that will be in the podcast episode show notes, so go to nordvpn.com/tcp to give it a try today.
Well, Danny, as we made our way to our makeshift recording studio on a rock overlooking the Sierra de Guadarrama, I think you asked what I made of today generally, and I think we're all in agreement, or we're certainly both in agreement, that it certainly wasn't a classic Sierra de Guadarrama penultimate day stage. I think if we're honest, we would admit that. There was some tension today. It was a very good race today. It was a very exciting race. I enjoyed the battle between the breakaway and the GC riders, particularly bearing in mind what we've heard from riders over the last few days, that today was, for an awful lot of riders, and certainly the likes of Ciccone, Landa, Bernal, this was going to be the last opportunity. So they were really desperate, but they knew as well that the odds were very much stacked against them with the way they anticipated UAE and Visma Lisa bike riding. And so it proved. In spite of everything, Little Trek did everything right today. They got the right men in the break. They pulled as hard as they could. Even Bernal with Jungels, they did their utmost to stretch the gap out and take the stage win away from the GC riders. But it simply wasn't possible with the firepower that UAE had. And I said yesterday that I didn't want to see Jay Vine, nothing against Jay Vine, but I didn't want to see him go away and win another stage and only for João Almeida behind. Well, only for us to wonder about what might have happened if Almeida had more support and they'd approach things in a different way. Now, I think the critics, the skeptics, as far as UAE are concerned, should probably have had their questions answered. We saw the alternative approach for UAE, and I think I'm right in saying this is the first time in this Vuelta a España when they've tried this approach, and it didn't work.
Yeah, indeed. And I was going to say, when I was hearing you, Daniel, that probably the main problem with the UAE tactics, if we can call it a problem, it is not about today. It's about what we saw for the previous stages in this Vuelta, because what they did today was, I think, almost everything they could do to try to beat Jonas Vingegaard in the GC. So I think today they tried so hard. It was a very high pace stage today, but I'm not sure if they're that calm, that convinced that they have done the greatest as they could in the previous stages of this Vuelta.
No, and we talked yesterday really about the lack of, the seeming lack of needle animosity. No, we don't necessarily want to see outright animosity between teams, but sometimes we do want to see a bit of pimiento, a bit of spice between the teams, and we haven't detected any. I was assured by someone today, actually, who works for one of the teams, that there has been some, just undetected by us. But João Almeida, at no point in this race, when we heard him speak after the stage, we heard him speak before the stage, at no point in this race has he given me the impression of someone who feels as though this Vuelta a España is, I don't want to say a matter of life and death, but that his career really is going to, it's going to be defined by what happens in this Vuelta a España. Even today, you know, I listened to the bit of the interview that you did with him, Danny, and I think broadly he's fairly resigned or reconciled, shall we say, to the outcome of this Vuelta a España, and I don't think he harbours any huge regrets. I don't know. Maybe João Almeida is just a sort of there's a bubbling kind of cauldron, or a cauldron that bubbles beneath the surface of João Almeida, the calm exterior of João Almeida, and there are all sorts of regrets and recriminations he has about this Vuelta a España, maybe about the way his team's ridden, maybe about the way that certain riders have gone for personal glory at his expense, but he doesn't betray any of that.
Yeah. I have this light impression that, well, we didn't see for sure that fire in Almeida's eyes, let's say, and I have the impression that if we have asked Almeida 3 weeks ago that the Vuelta was going to end with him in second position just a minute behind Jonas Vingegaard, probably he would be happy with that. And that's the reason why I think we're not seeing that fire, that tension, not just in his eyes, but in his eyes, sorry, but in the whole team. attitude towards this last stage in Guadarrama.
Yeah, I mean, I was around this team bus after the stage today, and I didn't get any sense. There was no air of deflation. There was disappointment. There was sort of a quiet disappointment, but I also got the sense that it was the outcome. If you'd asked them this morning, it was the outcome probably most of them, I don't want to say expected, but they certainly feared and they thought it had a kind of high probability of coming to pass. And so it proved. And Joao Almeida, I mean, I thought that moment when he was dropped, so to speak, by Jay Vine was kind of, that was telling, because it really underlined yet again what difficulty Almeida has with a change of pace. And the big story of his Vuelta a España, certainly in terms of not being able to beat Jonas Vingegaard, is that he's never been able to accelerate himself to the extent that he's dropped Vingegaard, and he's maybe brought other scenarios, we've talked about it before, satellite riders and so forth and so on, into play. There has never been, has there ever been more than a meter or two between their wheels in this Vuelta a España? I'm struggling to remember a time when there has been.
No, we didn't. We didn't saw that. And I don't know if, I mean, of course it's a great result for João Almeida. We're not saying it isn't, but I don't know if he is that kind of rider that can beat one of those great guys on a 3 weeks competition. I mean, he was close, we can say, this time, but at the same time it was close just in the classification time. It was not that close in our feelings. No. Following the race, you know.
Indeed, Danny. We should though give Visma at least bike their flowers. Another Grand Tour victory for them. We'll have all of the relevant stats on their Grand Tour empire tomorrow. And that's a shorthand way of saying that I haven't looked them up, haven't had time to look them up yet, also because of our dodgy internet. But Danny, what I do know is they've won two Grand Tours this year, and there have been moments in the last year or so when we've wondered whether their own empire has been kind of teetering a little bit, maybe their cycle might be coming to an end. But you can't really argue with two Grand Tours in a year, and Jonas Vingegaard has accomplished exactly what he came here to do. There's a lot of pressure on him. There was an awful lot of pressure on him. He was the outstanding favorite for this race, particularly when Juan Ayuso proved not to be in top form. I suppose he would have been the other rider who people thought might offer a challenge. So they've been very efficient, and they've not done anything extraordinary, anything too adventurous. I think, again, they've managed to avoid, apart from, well, they lost Zingle, and they also lost Campenaerts to illness. Do you know what? Another feature of their Grand Tours has been this year, lack of crashes.
That's true.
And that's been a feature of the Grand Tours in the past couple of years, where they've struggled, where they've not got the result that they wanted. We're going to hear in a minute one of their directs sportifs also pay tribute to a lot of the unseen work or unheralded work of Dylan van Baarle and Wilco Kelderman. Wilco Kelderman's a rider. Well, both of those riders, in fact, have had their problems, have had their issues with crashes. But as far as I'm aware, both of those guys have been healthy and functioning and very efficient throughout this Vuelta a España. Again, that hasn't been the most exciting aspect of the Visma Lisa bike performance in this Vuelta, but it's probably very important. And Ben Chulett as well has had an excellent race.
The best thing we can say about the team is that with all the pressure on their shoulders, they win the race. That was the thing they were looking for. So I mean, it sounds easy, but it is not easy. So with the pressure, I mean, they were the main favorite with Jonas. They did it. So yeah, flowers to them. Yeah,
we are going to hear now. I promised a couple of minutes ago that we were going to hear from one of their direct sportifs. It's another Dane, Jesper Morku, who we've heard from a few times in this Vuelta a España. And I spoke to him shortly after the finish, and he was a relieved and very happy man. When this morning it became clear that UAE were going to go with the sort of the hard pace tactic, they weren't going to use satellite riders, were you happier or more concerned?
No, actually we also thought about that they wouldn't do it, because we thought they would do a hard pacing during the day, and then they cannot use the satellite riders for that much. So in the end, that was also what our thoughts was they would do. And we just said it's not up for us for the stage, that up for them if they want to chase for it the whole day. They did, and that was in the end, that was perfect for us.
And at what point, where was the finish line in your mind, at what point were you relieved?
I would say on a climb like this, and especially like the last 3K, it's not like we can say, okay, when we come to the last 3K, it's difficult to lose 40 seconds, because in a such a steep grade like this, you can really lose time. When we could see into the steep part that Jonas was looking good, and Almeida a few times made a gap, and then especially when Jonas, he launched his attack, that we know, okay, now it's gonna go. We didn't know that he could do it to the end. But there's also a big difference in Almeida taking Jonas back and then gaining those more than 40 seconds. So from there on, we were quite secure.
And this will all sink in with time, I know. But if I had to sort of press you now on the keys of the last three weeks, what have been the actual, well, the absolute sort of keys that have allowed you to be here today?
I think the keys have been that Jonas have really trusted in himself, have self-confidence, especially the middle week where he didn't feel well. He was super flying the first week. We also saw that with two nice stage wins. And then he got a bit of sickness, but he always believed in himself. The team believed him in all the way, the teammates. And this team that have been around him here have been really amazing. It was a sad we lost Campanaerts in the last weekend, but like the Dutch Mafia with Kelderman and Van Baarle have been pure amazing this 3 weeks in the mountains with Kus and Matteo always around him, and like how also Ben Tullet really have been. I think it's a breakthrough for him also, how he have been climbing on the mountains. So I think this team we have been around Jonas have really trusted him and always been around him. So when you see some of the mountain stages and in the pure end we are sitting with four guys, that also give more belief to Jonas.
I spoke to you earlier in the world about how this was your first time in this position in the first car in a Grand Tour. What's the main thing that you've learned, if you had to put your finger on one thing?
I did the same in the Giro with Mark Raff, but there he had a little bit more responsibility than me. That was also good, so I could learn from him. But here I've been really, really learning for Wijnands and I to have the charts on it. And we had fully super support by like Nierman. He has also been here. And especially Eddie Engelst also have the experience for the Grand Tours. So for us, it has been a really good group and a really good working group.
As I said, tomorrow we're going to hear more about Jonas Vingegaard, his Vuelta a España. Even we're going to even hear, Danny, more about Jonas Vingegaard's origin story. We're going to go way back to the Fish Factory years tomorrow with a special interview that's already in the can. But we should switch our attention now to another battle at the top of the GC in this Vuelta a España. That was between Jai Hindley and Tom Pidcock. We completely fudged the timings earlier on. We completely cocked that up. But broadly speaking, I think we conveyed the main point, which was that Tom Pidcock was able to ward off all of the Jai Hindley and Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe as well. You know, we mentioned them setting the pace earlier on in the stage. He managed to defend his third position very effectively and did it with guts and gusto indeed today, Danny.
Yeah, indeed. And you know, after all the switch teams thing around Tom Pidcock, just in his first year with the new team, being able to get that Grand Tour podium, I mean, I think is something that we were not expecting, or at least I was not expecting this year from him. Even in La Vuelta, we can argue about the level of each Grand Tour, but even in La Vuelta, I was not expecting him to do it. He did it with 30 seconds. Well, I mean, we are expecting it still for tomorrow's stage, but he did it until today with 30 seconds advantage against Jai Hindley, and just 3 minutes and 11 seconds behind Jonas Vingegaard, which is the rider we all know it is.
Yes, Danny. I mean, it's difficult to evaluate sort of podium places in the Vuelta. I mean, they don't all carry the same value. We've had riders in the past finish third in the Vuelta who have subsequently done nothing in Grand Tours. But the big question I have at the end of this Vuelta a España, well, the question that's been answered is whether this was a good idea to go for general classification in this race. And a lot of people did have that question, and they were even more unsure of it than I think I was. I think I always felt that it was worth a shot. Other people have long thought that Tom Pidcock is not this kind of rider and should focus solely. The first thing he needs to focus on in some people's mind is the road, and the second thing is classics. I would like to think I'm a bit more open-minded as far as Tom Pidcock's career is concerned, and I thought it was worth a shot. It was worth a go, and I think they have had answers. But the next question, I have, Danny, is where next? What does this mean for the future of Tom Pidcock, the future of his career, the future of his career in Grand Tours? And that was one of the questions that immediately after the finish, just down the mountain, just pointed, in fact, it was way down there. I had to run miles down there to find the Q36.5 bus. That was a question I put to his long-time coach, mentor, who's been in the team car every day here at the Vuelta a España, Kurt Bogaerts.
This is obviously a sort of vindication for you coming to the Vuelta for GC. You know, a lot of people had doubts about that. Did you have any doubts before the Vuelta that this was worth pursuing?
No, I think it was the first time we really prepared for a GC, you know, a standalone event. Most of the time we went to Grand Tours with the main goal after the Grand Tour, World Championships or an Olympics. So this was the first time we were able to come fresh after the Giro and then to come with the right shape and mindset into and the freshness into a Grand Tour. And it was the first time that I was going to make an analyze of a Grand Tour, where he actually is, what's the work that we need to do. I think we are a little bit more than 3 minutes towards the winner, and now we need to know. If we want potentially win a Grand Tour these days, we need to close minimum 3 to 4 minutes. I think that's an achievable gap. And this is only the Vuelta, but I think it's an amazing step in the right direction for Tom with the numbers he was doing. And I think it's his body got a signal that it can recover during stages. I tried to set goals that were achievable. I didn't set the podium as a goal, but I'd say let's improve the Giro. Yeah. And I think that was relatively easy to do because we were not fresh starting the Giro. That was also not planned. Podium is, of course, an amazing step forward in his career.
The time trial is obviously part of that 3 minutes because he talks about how he's not done that much work in time trials. Where are the other big areas of improvement?
It's a bit everything, you know. You need to improve your time trial for sure. And then you need to improve the longer climbs. Sometimes, like the Bilbao stage, definitely cost him some energy in the second week. I think he had a high likely chance on paper to win this stage, and that was disappointing for him to get something already from the race, no matter what. So that was a tough one to deal with, and there he lost some energy, and he paid the price in these two stages at the end of the second week. Rest day was able to recover, and then he had a really good second week. I think where, again, I think a potential stage win was possible three, four days ago where Pellizzari won. Yeah. But that's all like, yeah, I think that was really mature how he raced there. And there he really showed the character, yeah, the confidence to go for that podium. He sacrificed there the stage win. And then that showed that he had confidence that he could bring the podium home. That shows a lot, in my opinion, that day that podium was a high chance. He put his mind towards something, then he didn't fail much.
Would you like that next Grand Tour, the next attempt at a Grand Tour, to be the Tour de France? Obviously, the circumstances are beyond your control.
Yeah, I think we try with what we can. We are scoring a lot of points the last weeks. So we try to get our future in our own hands as much as we can. We will try to race hard till the end of the season, see where we end. We build relationships with ASO and with RCS. We show that we are a team in progress. And I hope whatever happens that we get the opportunity, and I think it's a matter of time that we will be in the Tour de France. And then I think it should be the similar approach, try to be prepared going to an event like that, but also with achievable goals. I don't think we need to go for example next year to the Tour, try to win it or only to go for podium. I think we try to copy this and analyze this event in detail, and what can we do better, and what do we do already good. Let's make it achievable, the progression, and you also need to know that the opposition also will progress.
So that was interesting from Kurt Bogaerts. Interestingly also, I bumped into the team owner, Ivan Glazenberg, billionaire owner. He's always called billionaire owner. Ivan Glazenberg after the finish, and he didn't want to go on the record, but I do know that his sights, like Kurt Bogaerts, are focused on the Tour de France. Whether they get there next year is another matter. They certainly, I think they would have had a pretty good case this year already, and particularly with the results that Pidcock's had, I think they'll have a better one next year. But is it a good idea for that to be the next step, the next Grand Tour challenge for Tom Pidcock? I suppose a lot will depend on the routes themselves. My feeling, Danny, my sense is possibly that the Vuelta a España is the best suited of the Grand Tours to Tom Pidcock. Maybe I'm doing him a disservice, and we heard there Kurt talk about, you know, the margin for growth he still has, you know, the 3 minutes that he needs to find, he needs to make up, and Kurt Bogerts thinks that he can make them up. But I do wonder whether this race, with its slightly shorter stages, shorter climbs in particular, they're not all short climbs. We have had long climbs, but I do wonder whether this is the most congenial, shall we say, for Tom Pidcock.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially with that last thing you said about the shortest climbs, because I think we have saw Tom Pidcock just suffering with those long climbs in the Tour de France especially. So I think this kind of Vueltas a España we have seen the last 10 years, 15 years, is a route that can just match with him much better, as we saw with Primoz Roglic, which is of course a very different rider, but is these kind of finishes, I think, just suits him better.
The two places where he did look as though he was really under pressure were the Angliru and here today, Bola del Mundo, both long, pretty long climbs for Vuelta a España standards. And he really, again, I would sort of pay tribute to his guts and his just bloody mindedness to hang on, but he really did look as though he was on the edge at various times. And I think what's been really encouraging for Pidcock in this Vuelta is the way he has sort of saved, or as the French say, saved the furniture on the days when he hasn't been feeling tip-top. And he's done that a few times, and that's probably maybe has surprised me, particularly when we know that he's talked in the past about struggling to focus in Grand Tours and not really enjoying that part of Grand Tours, the need to mentally be engaged every day. But I think his race, okay, there's been no stage win, but beyond that, it's been an unqualified success. Danny, last thing I wanted to mention, obviously we heard from Richitello earlier. I mean, he's had an outstanding race. We haven't spoken about him much, probably for obvious reasons, because there is this huge, and now I can use the word elephant, this huge elephant in the room. He may have felt a bit less pressure, a bit less stress than some of his teammates, because he's leaving the team in a few weeks. This was probably leaving the team effectively in a few, might be in a few days, a few race days. He's not going to be there much longer, so he can sort of, he can put all this behind him. But Danny, there were more incidents today. This morning, when we got to the start, I was talking to people from the organisation. They feared a few points on the course today, and we mentioned that blockade at 18 kilometres to go. I spoke to one direct sportif who had the feeling, and he was sort of stopped. His car was stopped. He said that he had the impression that not all of the people at the roadside were. Protesters, and that there may also have been opportunists who had seen an opportunity to cause further damage, and possibly even there were people trying to take bikes off the roofs and cause other kinds of disruption that had nothing to do with the political issue at the heart of what we were worried about today.
Yeah. We saw that kind of stuff at the beginning of La Vuelta in Italy, but it's a shame to see these kind of things. But not just the protests, we have talked about the protests a lot during this Vuelta, but I mean the opportunist to do that is a pity, and I hope the riders get safe tomorrow to Madrid, because it's what we all want.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
Well, Danny, I've already mentioned our internet problems today, but this week in the Encuentro del Día, we have been talking about the internet, the World Wide Web, the information superhighway. Danny, we've been talking about...
Good way to call it.
Yeah, we've been talking about... That's way before your time. Information. That was one of the original names of the internet. The internet. The information superhighway. We have been careening, we have been speeding down the information superhighway this week because we've been talking to riders who have turned the marvels of modern technology to their advantage with various side hustles, various ingenious ways to communicate with their audiences on vlogs, podcasts, blogs, and so on and so forth. Thus far, we've had a few of them, they've all been riders. Now, for our last Encuentro del Día on this theme, because tomorrow, I'm not sure if we're going to have an Encuentro del Día, but we're going to have something, we're going to have various different things tomorrow. For our last installment of this series, I thought we would talk to someone who's not a rider, but has become more famous than the riders. This is a gentleman, and I'm not sure how many English-speaking listeners will be familiar with this gentleman, but he's a bit of a sensation at the Vuelta a España and in Spain in general. In fact, I have heard his name, Danny, and I'm not kidding you. I think I've heard his name at the roadside from fans' mouths more than any other rider. Whenever he's in the vicinity, I hear his name. Danny, what is this gentleman called? What is that name?
Pablo Ordorica.
Danny, you met him, or you already knew him, but you had a little chat with Pablo this morning, and hopefully in that chat we're going to find out a bit more about who the hell he is and why he's so popular. Here is the Encuentro del Día with Pablo Ordorica.
El Encuentro del Día, the meeting of the day.
Pablo, I'm going to ask you first, because here we are just by the Movistar team bus here at La Vuelta, penultimate stage, Robledo de Chavela. We're going to Bola del Mundo today. But we have seen a lot of people here in La Vuelta, not just today, ask you for pictures or even for autographs. So tell the people, who are you and what do you do in the team, in the Movistar team?
Well, I'm one of the press officers of the team. I travel with the team around the world and around the races, the most important races in the world. And at the same time, I create content on the social media. First of all, in YouTube, is my principal content is there. It's like blog, like inside. I'm trying to show my days on the races with the guys, the travels and everything. And I think that is because of that the people come to me and ask for photos, because I try to create content every day.
It is funny, Pablo, because it seems somehow that you're even more famous sometimes than the Movistar riders. I know you don't like to talk about it like that, but sometimes it's true. It seems true.
Yes, it's true. But the thing is that everyone now is in the social media, TikTok, X, Instagram, YouTube too. So finally, I'm creating content every day. So the families, the guys, the kids and everyone is looking for the social media. So if I am the face for the team or for my own social media, in front of the camera, it's normal that they support me or they know me, no more than some of the riders, because some of them, you know, that they are not really constant on the content on the social media. I think it's because of that. But yes, for me, sometimes it's like, oh, I don't feel comfortable if somebody say that I'm more famous than the riders, you know.
Could you tell Pablo, the audience, why did you start doing this? Because I think you did start doing this not just because of the team, but before, years before.
Yes, some years ago I was working for La Vuelta in marketing with the sponsors and everything. And in that moment in 2020, they say to me that I will lose my work because of the COVID. And in that moment I say, okay, Pablo, you like this world, you need to do something different. So it's time to work on your personal brand. And I start with YouTube in that moment for find my future jobs. And before to start to work with the team, mm-hmm. I was in different places, in different companies, in UEFA, in marketing agencies and different places. And at the same time, I was working on my videos, no? And I was changing a little bit my content, and now I find my place. And I think I am in the best place for do my content, for work with the team, with the sponsors and everything. And I'm really happy for it. And thank you for the sponsors, for the people, for the supporters that come to us and say, hey, Cañita Like is finally like my...
Like the main claim of the channel, right?
For sure. How
could you translate Cañita Like? That is difficult, but...
Yes, it's more or less like press the like button on YouTube. I start to say because of that, and finally the people start to say to me when they are in front of me on the race, hey, Pablo, Cañita Like? And it's really funny, and I appreciate that a lot, so thank you very much for all.
And Pablo, could you remember which one was the first time, the first shocking time that you actually thought, okay, this is going out of hands? Because we have seen in this Vuelta and in every race banners, people just screaming Cañita Like, as you said. So what was the first time you said, okay, this is just out of control?
Well, in La Vuelta that started in Holanda,
okay, yeah.
I don't remember the year, but we traveled by car to Vitoria. And when I arrived to the hotel in Vitoria with my friend Skamet, he's part of the staff of the Movistar team, a lot of kids were waiting for me in the hotel. And they asked me for a photo, and I said, wow, what happened here? I didn't understand nothing. And after that, the next day on the stage, Dani Miranda, that is a journalist from Spain, always remembered me. He said, you were close to Ayuso, to Juan Ayuso, and the kids asked you for a photo and not to Juan. And in that moment, I said, oh, what happened here? So since that moment, I think that everything changed, and yeah, it's nice.
That is crazy. I'm going to ask you the last question, Pablo, as we are getting surrounded by more and more people just waiting for a picture with you, which is actually true. Is it true, right?
It's true.
So my last question is, for how... far, I mean, how many years are you just wanting to do this stuff? Are you continuing to do this stuff? You really enjoy doing it, so how can we expect from you for the next year?
Never know, because like I say some minutes ago, the content is important to change. You need to be constant, but at the same time, you need to know how is more interesting for the people now. So for sure, I like to create content every day, but I know that I need to change some things year by year if I want to continue in the top of the wave, no?
So, Pablo, thank you so much, and let's hope that we have a very good stage today and tomorrow in Madrid.
Yeah, we will see tomorrow in Madrid. Maybe we have more chances for the win with Orlis Aulard. And I think that the team deserves it, no? After all the problems that we have in La Vuelta. So we will try, of course. Thank you for all.
Thank you, mate.
Ciao.
La etapa de mañana, la cena de ayer. Tomorrow's stage, yesterday's food.
Well, Danny, if tomorrow's stage, if it goes ahead, might be a bit of a nothing burger, certainly as far as general classification is concerned. Last night's meal was quite remarkable. It was quite remarkable. It was quite memorable. Certainly will be for me. I'm sure my description of it is not going to do it justice. However, it was a nice restaurant in Avila. I mentioned Avila already, home of Carlos Sastre. We booked a nice restaurant, 4.7 stars on Google. Pro tip, we always book restaurants before we arrive. Anyway, we showed up, and you know, there was some idiosyncrasies about the kind of waitering. They were very attentive, maybe a bit too attentive. I think we had three different waiters bring us the menu within 20 seconds of sitting down. But the main event of the evening was the desserts, and we'd already got a foretaste of this because early in the meal we'd seen a table adjacent to ours, well, a mocha coffee pot, like one of the old Bialetti coffee pots, arrive, and it became clear as we sort of craned our necks that this contained a tiramisu. which had an idiosyncratic spelling on the menu as well. Anyway, at the moment when this mocha pot came out, we heard the very famous Italian song, it's becoming incredibly famous in the last couple of years, Sarà Perché Ti Amo by Ricchi e Poveri. You know the song, Sarà Perché Ti Amo.
I'm not, confusione.
Yeah, there you go, there you go. We heard the song. And this song, it seems to be coming from someone's mobile phone. It wasn't played over sort of loudspeakers in the way that sort of Happy Birthday will be in restaurants sometimes.
We were so confused, to be honest.
We were very, very confused. And it seemed to be coming, if I had to guess, I would have said it was coming from the waiter's pocket, back pocket. Anyway, that was that. But there was more. There were more of these. There were more of these sort of shenanigans over the course of the evening, and we started to realise there was this whole performance around desserts in this restaurant. We innocently then, well, we received a menu for our desserts, and we didn't really want one, to be frank. But we ordered. It was sort of a citrus ice cream, wasn't it, Danny? And I feel the avian element, so the bird related element, there may have been some reference to bird's nests, which you sometimes get in restaurants, you know, some kind of caramel kind of straw fashioned into a bird's nest, and there may have been some reference to that, but I certainly didn't pay too much attention, and Dan is bringing up the video of it now, but it was definitely a citrus ice cream. Anyway, cut to sort of 2 minutes later, two bird cages appeared. And we heard tweeting birds, again, coming from the back pocket. Oh, there it is, in fact. Danny's playing it now. There we go. This was the noise in the restaurant. And yes, then the bird cage was duly placed in front of us. I was very relieved when a canary didn't fly out. And it was just pretty routine ice cream with sort of Oreo biscuits chopped up on top of it. And it was really, it was very overly elaborate. It didn't need to be that elaborate. It was fine as a dessert, but the whole performance around it, and the waiter was quite aggrieved, in fact, and he looked like we'd really kind of burst his balloon when we told him we don't want any music or we don't want any performance for our desserts.
But there was no option for us to get it without music.
We couldn't opt out of that. Anyway, Danny, the nothing burger of the stage tomorrow, Madrid, we all know it, the procession, your hometown. It's been shortened by 5 kilometers because of the threat of protest tomorrow. I saw the big bosses of the Vuelta a España, Kiko García, Javier Guillén, sort of, well, they had an impromptu meeting on the podium after all of the formalities had finished today, and they all looked very tired and they were probably concerned, still very concerned, but yes. I think every day that goes past without major incident, they are feeling quite relieved.
Yeah. And they are indeed, and they have just started this, I don't know if to call it a tradition, but just the position to not to talk to the media about anything related with the race, not even just the protest, but anything related to the race. I kind of understand why they are doing that. We were talking about it before start recording, but not details, not any shorten or any kind of decision around the race. So yeah, tomorrow we're going to have the 79th finish in Madrid out of 80. And what I mean with that is 79 times just arriving to Madrid but not finishing La Vuelta.
Not there. The end of the grand finale of the Vuelta, which was very often for a long time when the race was run by a Basque newspaper in the Basque country, particularly San Sebastian, very often. Anyway, Danny, we will not be in the Basque country tomorrow. We will be in your hometown of Madrid, and we will see all of, we won't see the listeners, but they will hear from us then.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Byrne.